Hello, and welcome to this Black History Month program honoring some of our citizens from the Northern Neck. I'm your host, Pixie E. Curry. I want to thank the Northern Neck Baptist Association moderator, Reverend Gernard E. Reed, corresponding secretary, Ms. Joy Carpru, and all the members' churches from Lancaster, Northumberland, Westmoreland, and Richmond counties. Thank you, Calvary Baptist Church, Reverend Samuel Kane, and the board members for the use of the facilities for all 5 days of this program. Today's guest is Mr. Morgan Curry. Uncle Morgan?
Yes.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. I know this is Super Bowl Sunday, and people are saying, why in the world is she talking on a day like this? But you were a star athlete at Julia Rosenwald and Central High School. And one of the questions I wanted to ask you, neither Central or Julia Rosenwald had a football team, but if they had, what position do you think you would have played?
I probably would have played running back or wide receiver.
Because?
Well, I mean, I had electrifying speed. I was caught one time running 100 yards in 8 seconds when they turned the time in. I was told that a human being couldn't run that fast. And so later on, they had me run it in two weeks later, and I ran it in 9 seconds. And that still was the world record, really, until 1963, when Bob Hayes of the Dallas Cowboys ran it in 9 seconds. Quite nice. He went to Texas A&M, and they recognized it then.
No doubt you would have been captain of the football team, too.
More likely, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I have no doubts. What do you think are some of the big challenges or the greatest challenges some of the Black athletes, and that's men and women, that they face today?
Well, it's always a challenge when you want to be great, or you try to cross over from amateur to professional. But today, it's not as hard today as it was when we came along, because you have a lot of exposure now that we didn't have back then.
So you're saying that the challenges aren't really present?
Oh, they might be. Well, they are present to a certain extent. But the thing of it is, if you got the dream, stay with the dream, because the type of communication that they have today, you are more likely now somebody's going to recognize you today, or somebody's going to see you today if you stay with it.
Well, that's sort of what's happening with your granddaughter, Kiara.
That's right.
Eubanks. Tell me about her.
Yes. Kiara is in the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame in Delaware, and she's also on the National Honor Society, having a 4.0 grade average. And it's a funny thing you asked me that today, because she's studying for a doctor's, and they played their old team today. They beat them by 25 points. So she's up in Connecticut going for a doctor's now, and And recently, she has gotten 2 letters from the professional team in London and one in Portugal. And so she's well on her way.
I think 25 points means spanking, right?
Yeah, that's a good spanking. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, you bring up a good point about women basketball players. They have to go overseas. We just witnessed Brittany having to go to Russia and then being imprisoned. And the reason why she was there, because she can't get the salary that men receive here in the United States. What are some of the things that, need to be in place that can change?
Oh, yeah. Well, I definitely think that they deserve the same salary. But I sort of think last year, I do think that they have come to agree on a better salary than what they have been getting. And it's still not as high as the men, but I think it has gotten pretty feasible now that they'll start to look at it again.
Name three of the most significant events that happened within your lifetime as it pertains to your civil rights.
Well, number one, I would say the march that Martin Luther King had when he marched on the capital of Birmingham. And I also think that the Million Man March was a great thing that happened during my lifetime event. And Barack Obama, you know, that's the greatest event I would say that it happened during my lifetime.
What person in history would you want to have met, and what would you ask them?
Muhammad Ali. I tell you the truth, I think he's probably the most extraordinary person that I can think of, because he didn't only pick on the racial problem, but he took on the whole nation. He took on the most powerful nation in the world. He stood his ground. He won. And that made him, instead of them putting him down, that made him greater than what he was. And so I would say Muhammad Ali probably is the most influential person that I could even think of that could top him when it comes to meeting him. I sort of think I would love to have met Muhammad Ali.
And what would you ask him?
I would ask him how in the world was he able to attain that type of bravery. I mean, you have to be brave and fearless. He was sort of like Geronimo. I mean, in other words, he wasn't afraid. He just stood his ground.
You also was telling me the story how the DuPonts had an ammunition plant initially, and there were frequent explosions. And at one time, there were many Black workers there that died, and they buried them in a mass grave.
Yes. I was told when I was young and even up in my teenage years about that Alpha DuPont always did some work with explosives, bullets, and whatever explosive devices that you deal with. And they had a big explosion there at one time, and that there were 80 couriers that were killed at one time, and all of them was buried in a mass grave on the point overlooking the Prentice Creek. And I think they named the point Graveyard Point, but now I don't know where Graveyard Point is on the chart, a detailed chart of the creek or not, but that was always told to us when we were young. It was always there, and I'd been to it several times when I was a boy. I never did go after I was a man, just go down and walk around. But other than that, that's the only thing I know.
Mm-hmm. Julia Rosemall High School and Central High School, two schools mm-hmm. that in the Northumberland County eliminated Black schools. Either right. They tore them down, they renamed them, repurposed them.
Julius Rosenwald and Central, both of them had been torn down. Often think about Julius Rosenwald, and then I think about Marjorie School. But some great people. Julius Rosenwald put out some great people, and so did Central High School. So it really, a lot of it depends on the person who's going. Judas Rosenwald mixed that person, but you made Judas Rosenwald too, as well as Central. So most of it really, really stems from the, how you approach the situation, you know, and you feel when you see somebody from Judas Rosenwald or somebody from Central that you know of, I tell you, it gives you a feeling that only you can have. Trust me, it's real special for me to see somebody that I went to school with at a Jewish Roman Law or went to school at Central, because during that time, we were so close. I mean, Black people then, they really, really, really were close to each other. And then to me, it seems like after integration began, I don't really feel like that we are as close now as we were back then, because we made something out of nothing back then.
There is a foundation for the Dewey Rosenwald High School, Northumberland County. They're trying to restore it, to preserve it, because Dewey Rosenwald High Schools or Dewey Rosenwald Schools are considered historical. Like 14 or 17 states, primarily in the South, where those schools were built. And there's some that are still surviving, but they need help to preserve them. Dewey Rosenwald, Northumberland County High School is still standing, but no more Central. Someone wants to know, when you were a teenager, what support did you receive to pursue sports?
Well, look, when I was a teenager, really playing sports among the people in the neighborhood, that's all we really had. We really didn't have nothing else, because a lot of times, see, we didn't have money and stuff to buy balls and bats. We'd go in the woods and cut our bats, and then we'll take like a piece of light wood and wrap rags and stuff around it, and sometimes put a few smooth rocks in it to make balls. And that's where we got our balls and our bats from, right out in the woods. And by the time we got to school and played on the diamond that was decent, we'd play well, because we were used to playing with all them ruts hitting us all in the face and in the everywhere. So we actually, you know, became pretty good. The whole time I went to Rosenwald, we never lost a game. We never lost a game in regular season. And, you know, that's almost a legend in itself to do that the whole year. Then Central and Rosenwald together, the only game that we lost one game to Amelia County. And we won the state championship one year and came right back the next year and lost by one run, just on a bad call by the umpires. But we never went to the Nationals because we hadn't money to go. The Nationals was in Tennessee, but we actually could have went every year. And from my experience, after I got out of Virginia going places, there's a lot of boys in Northumberland and Lancaster County actually could have played pro ball, but we just didn't have no exposure. We didn't have nobody really, you know, sending us like nothing. And my oldest boy was born 11 days before I graduated from school. And you know, and my mom and dad had 19 children, so, you know, I had to look out for him. I couldn't ask nobody but to look out for him. And so when I was scouted by the Pittsburgh Pirates, they told me to come back the next day. But I didn't have no way, because we didn't have no car or nothing. And so then they told me to come back the next year. Well, guess what? The next year, Junior was gone. So if I had just kept going, I'm almost sure I know I could have made it. Yeah. Now, I tell the young boys, if they look, stay with your dream. Don't give your dream up. You can make it. Yeah.
What do you want to be remembered for?
Well, I'll tell you what. When I was coming up, by me getting married at a young age, I was always associated with young people. So I actually grew up with my boys when they were growing up. I was ahead of them, but I still had some growing up to do. All of the boys in the neighborhood just used to always follow behind me, and I gave them a lot of time. When I got able to get a truck, I'd for just a minute that I could get on the truck, and we go around, we play games, we do this and that, and a lot of times I chaperone for them when they have things at the school. Sometimes I would even take a chance on letting them drive my car. They had no license. Today, and I feel good about it because those boys right today, they still come by to see me now, and sometimes the children come to see me. Daddy said this about you, Mama said this about you. So I really feel like that I helped a lot of them to get where they are, because most of them have done well, quite well in life. And I will tell anybody out here, make sure that you take care of the young people in your neighborhood, and always be prepared to tell them something good. Watch what you say or do in front of them. Try to keep it clean, and I believe that you'll come out A1.
What was the best advice you was given when you were preparing to enter adulthood?
Well, I can thank my daddy for this, because I never saw him when he didn't have a job. He always worked all the time, and that created a tremendous work ethic in all of us that came up behind him. I'll tell anybody, when you start to go into adulthood and you get your job, work just as hard as you can work. Try to be the best worker there you got. Because, see, remember, always remember, if you get behind the fastest person in front of you, when I say fast, I don't mean particularly running. You get halfway behind, that means then you got to work twice as fast as he is going, but you got to keep the same speed to stay with him. So the best thing for you to do is make up your mind, I'm always do the best I can, and you, 9 times out of 10, you'll win. You'll definitely win.
That being said, what challenge will you give to the young Black people of today?
I'll tell the young Black kids today, dream just as big a dream as you can dream. The sky's the limit. You can go just as far as you want to go. It's going to be hard, but it'll be good in the end. That's what I tell them. Never stop dreaming.
Thank you, Uncle Morgan, for participating in this program. I'm always in awe in the fact that there were 19 children from your family, 3 sets of twins. All of you were unique and extraordinary in your own way. And I just wonder, how in the world did you all manage to, first of all, it was just 7 of us, and I think most time we felt like we wanted to kill each other because we was, you know, had such big personalities. But how did you all manage to coexist in such a large family? How did your parents manage to keep you all on that path of achievement?
Well, I tell you, they definitely did a great job, and let me tell you this: we had a large family, but we had a lot of advantage on a lot of people. I was really born with a photocopy memory, because I can remember when I was 2 years old. I can remember back that far, and my sister Josephine taught school every night when I was young coming up. Every night she taught school. And by the time that I got in the first grade, I could read all the first grade books, and most of the books from the first to the seventh. I remember when I was 6 years old one day, I got on the bus and there was a book laying down there, and I picked it up and I gave it to the bus driver. I said, "Here's a book, Literature and Life." And the bus driver liked it, jumped at the bus. He said, "Boy, how in the world did you know the name of that?" I was only 6 years old, but my sister Josephine had taught us, and by the time that I got to the first grade, the books and things they put up to me were nothing. I could just go right through them just like nothing. So that was our biggest advantage, and I loved to read, and I remember when I used to read 2 or 3 books a week sometimes. And when we had the Black History Week in at Annecy Jean, most of the time I would always win because I read so much. When I used to go to work for people, they would save all their monthly periodicals and newspapers and stuff for me to read. Came time for me to eat my lunch, they would have all the neighbors over to listen at this little Black boy read. So really and truly, I mean, I was just like that. It really was advantage to us. But we could help each other, you know, and stuff like that. And so it was pretty good. It really wasn't bad. Mm-hmm.
Which sport did you participate in that was closest to your heart?
Well, I would say baseball and basketball, but yes, baseball was my first love because that's where I started to play at. And believe it or not, I remember one particular incident playing baseball down at Yorktown, Virginia, when I was at Julius Rosenwald. I caught so many balls, made so many catch balls that they didn't think I could catch, and I caught them, and they held the game up for an hour because one man swore that he had seen me playing pro ball on television, so they investigated that, and that didn't work out. And so they wouldn't let nobody hit no balls in the outfield, because that's where I was playing. Some hit balls on the ground so I couldn't get to them. So I guess that baseball probably would have been the best one.
What pushed you the hardest during the peak of your athletic journey? Siblings, teammates, coaches, or were you just self-driven?
To be honest with you, I was just self-driven. I mean, I loved it. I've seen time when I would go to bed with the bat and the glove in the bed with me. You know, I was just that hung up on it, you know. I loved it. I just loved it. One time I was off the boat for a while. So when I was 28 years old, Dick Bullitt, from the scout from the Baltimore Orioles, saw me play. And he told me, he said, if you were 25, he said, I'd sign you right now. But he said, you're 28, and by the time you put 3 years in, you're 31, and we might not be able to get our money out of you. So I really could play. No question about that. No question about it.
This is William Pope. And I wonder if Mr. Curry ever played much against Brookvale High School.
Did you hear that, Uncle Morgan? They want to know if you ever played against Brookvale.
We played against A.T. Wright. And Brookvale moved up to Brookvale in 1959, I think 1959. But so I played with some of the boys that went to Brookvale after got out of school, because we had a semi-pro team after we graduated.
Oh yeah, Brookvale and A.T. Wright and Central and Julia Rosenwald was the throwdown. Mm-hmm. Oh yes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That was. Yeah. They were rival schools. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Those old school robberies. Living in a house where my mom, she went to A.T. Wright, Daddy went to Julia Rosenwald, which translated to Brookvale and Central, which later turned into Lancaster High School and Northumberland High School. The discussions, and I'm being very kind by using the word discussions, when they played, it was epic in that household. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. I played basketball against Brookvale. For 1 year, we didn't have no gym until our last year in school, we didn't have a gym until then.
I was just wondering also, there was a lot of community baseball teams, like the men in the communities, and they used to go to different places to play against each other, particularly like during May Days. That was always a great event for May Days, because if they didn't have the schools to play against each other, it was the men from the communities that had made up their own teams to play. Did you ever participate in those events?
Oh, yeah. We played, A.T. Wright. Yeah, we played A.T. Wright at May Day, at their May Days, and they played it out. In fact, that was the last game we played A.T. Wright. Because then we moved up to Central in the fall. That's right.
Yeah. At 59?
No, we moved up to Central in the fall of 58. Then we graduated in the spring of 59.
But there used to be like baseball teams, like from Bill Gustus and Rice's.
Bill Gustus was at Northumberland Giants. They had this semi-pro team, the Northumberland Giants. And you really had to be real good to make that team. No question about it. It wasn't no play around there. They were just like a minor league. Well, they was real like a minor league team for us. Yeah, but anyway, we played them every year. We played them every year. I can remember we beat them. They beat us some. We beat them. But as far as the other high school teams, we never lost a game in high school the whole time I've been in high school, except to Amelia County and the championship game.
I think that sports is like one of those vehicles for young men back in the day to move ahead, just like joining the military. Lack of opportunities for Black men and Black women, because there were softball teams where the women were traveling through these segregated towns when, you know, there was potential danger for people that was traveling, trying to prove themselves on the playing field. And here we are, as I say, today is Super Bowl Sunday, and we have two Black quarterbacks. You couldn't say that about, 60 years ago? Couldn't say that. Did any of your sports teams face all white schools where spectators use racist language directed at you and your African-American teammates? And if so, was it deflating, or did it help rally your team to become closer?
When I was going to school, we never played all white team in the school. We had played mixed teams that come out of the city, a team called the AC Rangers up in Baltimore, and they had some white players playing, but it was nothing like that. They didn't have no problem with the race there, because we never really played all white team. I don't know, where it would have been different, but not with the one that I played against, no.
What books stand out in your memory?
I'm going to say, I guess The Best and the Brightest is a book that stands more out in my memory than any book that I've really read, because it really makes me think that that's why Alice Haley wrote the book about Roots. I just sort of think that what I read in that book was made him do that, because when he come up with the idea, he woke up one morning in a hotel room with two cans of sardines and a half a can of beer, and he said, "I can do better than this by reading that book, The Best and the Brightest." I sort of think that sort of inspired him to do that, and what he said really. That book made a lot of sense, because there were how many millionaires that they interviewed for that book that didn't even finish high school. So that's why I said you got to stay with your dreams, because dreams really do come true, but they won't come true for you if you don't stay with it.
Were you allowed to read whatever you want? And did you have access to a library?
We didn't have access to a library. A lot of the books that I read were really given to me. Places that I worked, people were given to me, you know. But I loved to read. I always did, you know, because like I said, I started reading early. And by that way, you know, I could show off a little bit. How do you know this? And I read this. And so, no, but we didn't have access to a library then when I was young. No.
And that includes not having a school library also, correct?
Right. That's right. Right. No. We didn't have school library either. No.
I think I asked this question during your interview, is what were some of your favorite subjects when you were in school?
Oh, well, I'll tell you, history, I love history, and I was real good at math. I did pretty well in school because, like I said, but being so many children in the family, see, a lot of times we had to stay home from school. We had to work, buy clothes. A lot of times we had to stay home from work, getting money to buy, because you had to buy your own books back then. See, they didn't give you no books and stuff back then. Buy books, buy clothes, and then help mom and dad and them, you know, stuff like that. So we didn't go to school a lot, but still, I graduated second in the class. Really could have graduated first in the class, but you know how it goes. But I wouldn't take nothing from the school days. They're the best days of your life.
Uncle Morgan, like I say, this is Super Bowl Sunday. Someone wants to know who you want to win today. Who you rooting for?
I tell you, this is the hardest one I ever had. So I really feel like that if Mahomes, I just feel like if Mahomes gets blocking up front for him, I sort of think he'll win. But if it black and break down, I think the other Philadelphia will win. Any way you look at it, I'm still a winner.
That sounds like you waffling.
Yeah, I'm still a winner.
Yeah, you waffling. Yeah. I'm going with Kansas.
Yeah.
I'm going to put myself out there. I'm going to let you go. And I do thank everybody for participating. Really appreciate everyone supporting this event.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
So first of all, how are you doing today?
I'm fair.
You fair?
Nothing bragging about it, but I'm still among the land of the living.
Well, that's a blessed thing. I'm glad you're among the land of living. You and I, we was talking on the phone the other day about athletes that goes to the HBCU, the Historical Black Colleges and Universities. Do you think that they are being looked at more closely now, especially since Deion Sanders came in and took over Jackson University?
I don't know where to say not to that is because I guess nobody ever played the game better than Deion Sanders when he was playing. And I think it was almost impossible to keep passing him by for one of the top positions in the game. I mean, I know that there are good coaches, people that could coach in the black guys that could coach but are being passed by because they're hiring some white boys that have never even played the game, coached or played the game. So that's why I said no. I don't think they're not giving them their due because that would be more black coaches in the NFL than there is now.
But do you think that college athletes at the HBCUs, do you think that they would get more attention now that they have proven, not that they had not, but that more attention will be given to black athletes at historical black colleges and universities?
I think it's too early to tell whether they're going to do, you know, on discretion, because unless the only way I can see it, unless white boys that went to college with black boys that and they might say something as big as that will help the cause, but I just feel like they're not doing enough. They're not really doing enough. I don't think. But I'm hoping that since Dion was picking like that, that they would begin to do it. But because number one, there's not enough black coaches really coaching on a college level at big name schools. So I sort of feel like. It's a beginning. No question, buddy. You got to have a beginning. But I just feel like that they are not doing enough. I don't think so. I don't think they're doing enough yet. I mean, people like Deion Sanders was an exceptional athlete, and he could do it in two sports. Could have been All American or all, whatever you want to call him, All Star in two different sports. So. I think we just have to watch and see what go on when we can come to that point to really say that they would do it. Because, like I go right back and say what I just said, they got the best that anybody could get when they got Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders probably, and I believe he will speak out, and so he could interject his thoughts on what has really happened. And I think he could play a big role in it as far as getting other black coaches into coaching, that type of thing.
Do you think that college athletes should be compensated for playing college sports?
Of course, I said that for years. I mean, when you stop and think a coach coaching them make $4 or $5 million, and he don't get a dollar legally. He couldn't get a dollar legally. I definitely think that they should get some money on for playing. Yeah, I think that's okay. That's fine. I agree with that.
So you have a daughter and two granddaughters that played basketball, and one of your granddaughters is excelling like nobody's business. So tell me a little.
That's right.
Tell me a little bit about Kiara Eubanks.
Well, Kiara is a great athlete, and a lot of people don't know. I guess that playing like that, and she plays against the doctor's wishes because Kiara came down with lupus when she was 15. The doctor told her that he thinks she was going to have to rethink her thoughts about playing basketball at the college level, and she told him, gave him a blank answer. No, she definitely wasn't going to stop playing basketball. So far, she did, and she really has played exceptionally well, especially with that type of thing. But she's a great player, especially after this last game. I don't know whether you read it or not, but in 3 seconds left on the clock, trying to get that shot up, and the girl was holding on to her, and she threw the basketball up underhand and made the basket. Just made a three-point play, but then she made a foul shot after that. So she really is a tremendous player. No question about it.
She was playing double doubles. She had double doubles when she went to the championship game.
Yeah, that's right. She is right. She sure did. Yeah, because her last three games were double doubles. Yeah. No question about it. She really had played exceptionally well. She sure did.
And she's an exceptional academic student, too. She's an honors student.
That's right. Yeah, 4.0 perfect grade average. And she's already been inducted into the Hall of Fame in Delaware, women's basketball. So she really has played exceptionally well.
So her mother, Victoria, and her sister, Asha, they, as I said, all of them played basketball. So they they followed in Pop-Pop's footsteps.
And then also her daddy was a great basketball player, too. He had a nickname, Shatter. And so he played got a lot of basketball, too. Yeah, I didn't know him when he played, but I hear them talking. Well, I heard them talking about it, how good her father was when he was in high school. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you think is the future for women's sports?
Oh, cause no question about it. Women's sports, they are definitely going to be looked at different from now on because there are some women who really can play basketball exceptionally well now, and the game has changed, you know, from what it used to be. They just go right along and play the same style that the men are playing now. So I think it looks good. The future looks good for them, and I think a lot of young women are probably looking at that now, especially they can get that price up on them in this country. Yeah, yeah. I know she got letters from a professional team in London and one from a team in Portugal. That tells me right then that, you know, somebody is watching her. Yeah.
It's very, very wonderful.
I tell you.
Yeah.
It sure is. It's great. Believe me.
I know you're so proud of her, as you are of all of your children, your grandchildren.
Yeah. She's really blossomed. No question about that.
I wanted to flesh out the interview that I had with you on Super Bowl.
Right. Yeah.
Look. And who won? Should I talk about it?
I tell you, but we couldn't lose it on that one.
No. Patrick said no. It's not going to happen on my watch.
Yeah, we couldn't. Philadelphia didn't really have the defense that I thought they would have. The rookie really, that boy did his job. No question about that. But they didn't hold. Mm-hmm.
So Lancaster is state champions.
I heard somebody talking about that, but I didn't hear or see neither one of those games. Yeah,
they beat George with 64-40 here in Richmond.
Oh, okay, that's great.
Yes,
yeah, that's real good. Mm-hmm.
Is a hotbed of champions.
Yeah,
it's not just, you know, champions in sports, but just champions in just having heart.
Oh, that's right. It's great.
And you're one of those champions, Uncle Morgan. I just want to say that.
Yeah, we believe it or not, we were the first black team in this area to win a state championship. We were the first one. And we really, if we had had the same, had that school, I would like to have had that school for 2 years or 3 years before I graduated school with the modern facilities. But we didn't have no modern facilities, so that means we couldn't invite the team that we really, you know, wanted to play against. But because we had to go away and play them, you know, but they were used to having indoor toilet facilities and that type of thing. And we didn't have them, so we couldn't do that in 1958. To play these other teams, but still, at the record that we had, even had an outdoor facility, nobody really beat us like anything. Nobody never beat us regular play. We only lost one game. The second time around, we run up state championship in 1959 because the umpire made a bad play. Ain't no question about that. He called it wrong because we nailed the guy at the plate. But the umpire didn't call it. He called him safe. But he was out. Everybody on the field, both sides knew he was out. But anyway, we would have won two in a row if he had called a game like it should have been. Yep.
This was at Julia Rosenwald or at Central?
We won the state championship the last year at Julia Rosenwald, and then we moved up to Central. And the next year, we was run up, but We sure won the game, but we lost it 2-1 on a real, real bad call from the umpire. I'll tell you, sure did. Amelia County beat us in that game, but it was very bad. Both coaches talked about it, but we couldn't do nothing about it, you know. Yeah, there were some good athletes enough of them and some good winning lines to them.
The apple didn't fall too far from the tree.
That's right. That's exactly right, honey. I tell you, yeah. Mark would have been a great basketball player, but he just had medicine was on his mind. He wanted to go in the medical field, so I went right along with it. You know, I didn't tell him no, don't do it. But he did good because he made some money in it. So and he's still making some money in it. He came down here and got one of the biggest jobs
down here because he can. He's doing contract work with Wittenberg doctors, and he's doing great, really great. Yeah. I grew up on the water and idolized my father. When I come on the boat, it's getting real rough. Captain would call me. A lot of times I was staring and stuff for them. And I know when they lost in 1972, they lost a boat called the Finn McDonald. Charlie Winston was the pilot on the boat. Charles Forster was the captain. And it was so rough, the wind blew up to hurricane force wind. I would listen at them. We were like 11 or 12 miles behind the boat. They lost 7 boys that night. Turned to go into Beaufort, North Carolina, and got sucked crossways, and she went down. And I had taken over the boat about 6 o'clock that evening. It was November. And the captain had given up. He was so in such bad shape he couldn't even talk. So then I went in, and the pilot asked me, he said, "Can you stir?" I said, "Sure, sir." He said, I can't see. I said, "I'm going in there and clean my glass up." I told him, "Go ahead, I got it." I never saw him no more until the next day because he didn't even come back out. So I stayed in there until I got the boat up under the shore, knocked the wind off him. And then the captain started to talk then. And then the next morning, it was still blowing. I mean, good, but it was daylight. A sea is different in the day than in the night. I mean, you can see it because during that night, I had to count during that night how many times before the big sea would come. And you know when to slow down and when to speed up until once that camp began to get long, then I knew that we were getting better. But it was 3:30 that morning. By the time we got up, we started running over six hours. To get to where I had to get the boat out of harm's way. But if I had followed in the same steps that the other man followed, I don't know where we could have made it or not. But I was fearless. It was really hard to make me afraid of a storm or something like that. I didn't really think about it. I just always said that if I was running the boat, I believe I could bring it in, It's been like that. That's the only reason why that I didn't fish a boat as long as I did, because they wouldn't give me a really good boat. I mean, nothing. Just a pile of junk you had to work with. And still, I caught like 4 or 5 times the amount of fish they thought I would catch, because they know they didn't have no rig. And the boss told me one time down there, he said, "I'm going to tell you the truth." He said, I'm a redneck from Columbia, Mississippi. He said, "I ain't used to blackfish you that will stand up and do what you say you're going to do." And I told him, "Well, I'm a black Nick from Kilmont, Virginia, and I'm used to meeting redneck like you every day." Yeah.
Dedicate the show in memory of my parents, Mr. James C. and Mrs. Shirley M. Hill Curry, Julia Rosenwald and A.T. Wright High School, respectively, and my sister, Angela Diana Curry. Thank you all for listening and for participating.